Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is December 8, 2011, and tonight we are talking about young writers programs. I'm your host, Tanya Baker, at the NWP in Berkeley, California. Tonight, we are pleased to have several guests to talk with us about their experiences leading their sites' strategic thinking about work with young authors. The show will give you a glimpse into some models of young writers' programs at three writing project sites. And beyond that glimpse into these innovative programs, our guests will share their thinking about this work as a means of building capacity at the site and making the work central to the site's overall mission. We think you will find this live broadcast particularly timely at this moment when sites across the country are thinking about sustainability and exploring new funding streams. As always, if you are listening to us live, we invite you to join us in the chat room where we'll be posting links to materials related to tonight's program. And as a special treat for me and for you all, I am joined by co-host Mike Mathis, NWP's Director of Grants and Contracts. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Tanya. And hi to our listeners. I'm happy to be here.
Tonight, Mike and I are pleased also to welcome Mary Buckaloo, the director of the Pennsylvania Writing and Literature Project, Paul Rogers, director of Northern Virginia Writing Project, and Carol Minner, director of the Great Valley Writing Project. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
Thanks.
Hi.
Thanks all for being here. These three writing project directors facilitated a popular workshop at NWP's 2011 annual meeting, and we invited them to share ideas from the workshop with a broader audience. You'll also be interested to know that each site is preparing a monograph about their work with young writing programs as part of the NWP at Work series. The monographs will be available later in 2012. Mike, before we turn the floor over to our guests, give us your sense of the value and the possibilities in the work we'll be hearing about tonight.
Sure. So one value that I like to talk about has to do with site revenue, which is clearly under a lot of pressure these days. It's pretty common for young writers' programs to be funded by tuition paid by the parents of the kids that participate in these programs. And that's quite a benefit in the sense that this is a different kind, a different source of funding than we're used to using in most of the other activities that sites do. It's unique in that it's less vulnerable to being cut off by the cutbacks of public funding.
That's an interesting point, Mike. Of course, there are also a lot of young writers programs that do depend on institutional funding, right?
Right. And a strategic value in that, that I know our guests are going to talk about, in fact, is that young writers' activities fit beautifully into partnerships with local institutions. Institutions, for example, that have educational resources that they would like to share with teachers and with teachers' students.
Things like museums and libraries.
Yes. Then from the standpoint of our core work as educators and colleagues, these projects with young people provide an absolutely ideal laboratory for teachers to explore new ideas in their classroom practice, not to mention, of course, gaining experience and confidence with any classroom practices that they might want to work on, especially given the fact that these young writer situations are significantly lower stakes setting in most cases than classrooms where people are having to follow the protocols that have been mandated for them. In these programs, in young writers programs, they're free to imagine and create.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, Mike. I think even more than when I was in the classroom, we hear so much in writing projects, teachers talking about things they'd like to try or things they wish they could do, but they can't because so much of their curriculum or so much of their time is mandated to particular things.
I think what makes today's discussion especially important is that these kinds of programs have a kind of durability that in a period of great flux and even retrenchment that's being experienced by our schools and universities, that can be a kind of bastion for the stability of a site. It can be a centerpiece for sustaining the work of the site over time. I hope that this aspect of the potential comes out of the conversations that we're about to have with our guests.
That's great, Mike. I don't know if I've ever heard you say that a young writing program could be a bastion of stability for a site. So
bastion of stability.
Oh, I guess we should hear about these bastions of stability, huh?
Right. Let's see. As we listen to them, too, we want to recognize that the space of time we've got here to talk about them is relatively short. So I want to make sure we assure our listeners that we have documents and resources from these sites that give far more detail about what they're doing than we have time to cover in this show. We assembled these resources in the process of doing a workshop at the annual meeting, and they've been posted in NWP Connect. So for our listeners who would like to look for them, they would go to NWP Connect and then go to the NWP Site Leaders Community, and there they will find in the Shop Talk page a forum discussion where these things are posted. So they just look for the Shop Talk tab in the Site Leaders Community.
Shop Talk tab. Got it. Thank you, Mike. We look forward to hearing more from you throughout the show. But right now, we want to ask each of our guests to give us an overview and a brief glimpse into the models of work with young writers at their site. Mary, can we start with you?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the work with young writers fits into the work of the Pennsylvania Writing and Literature Project?
Oh, sure, Tanya. Just hello to everyone. Our Summer Young Writers and Readers Program is headed into its 28th year. So we are an established site, and we've certainly had time to build on that, build every year on the foundation that was set 28 years ago. We offer classes for students in grades kindergarten through 12th grade. We currently have, for the upcoming summer of 2012, 16 public school sites. We have two sessions at our own university site, and we have six specialty site locations, which we'll talk a little bit more, we'll talk about later. And approximately in the past 13 years that I've been with the project, we've had 800 to a little over 1,000 students attend our summer programs in the variety of locations that I just mentioned. Yes.
Sorry, I just want to say those are amazing numbers.
And they fluctuate, but pretty much we hold steady 800 to 1,000, and that's certainly because of our TCs and how much they believe in what we do during the summer to enrich students' lives. Our youth program, though, begins in the Summer Institute when new TCs are introduced to our youth programs through a panel. We provide a space of time in the Summer Institute for a panel of our veteran TCs to share the ways that new TCs can stay active and connected to the project. And, of course, one of those ways that we find, obviously, after 28 years, it's integral, are our youth programs. So youth is one of the possibilities, and the TCs who come to share what they do in the summer with youth programs inspires those new TCs to go forth and help start new sites or teach at existing sites. Our youth programs are all modeled on the Summer Institute, from literacy-based community-building activities to reading, pre-writing, brainstorming, writing, conferring, and publishing. Each youth course includes the components of a Summer Institute with guest speakers or Skypes from authors who can confer with our young writers and readers. However, there is a difference, and we've kind of held to this for 28 years. We have not changed the model that the youth writing camps are only 3 hours a day, and most of them run for 2 weeks, 10 days, and or we do have some one-week specialty courses. So that's kind of an overview of how we, right now at this point, are thinking about our youth programs and where we are.
A great picture, Mary. Can you say a little bit more about the part about how new and veteran TCs are supported in developing and expanding your program?
We intersperse, Tanya, throughout the year, professional development opportunities, which we require actually for veteran TCs, but then we invite new fellows, new TCs, to join us so that they can be mentored, can talk with TCs who've already taught in our programs about what it looks like, what does the summer program look like. Because right now we are a summer program. We have a few things that go on during the year, our electronic poetry contest, which helps us advertise. But we do intersperse professional development opportunities for veterans and new TCs to come together to talk about what happens in the summer Young Writers, Young Readers program.
Great. Thanks, Mary. Let's see. I think we could now bring in Carol. We will have an opportunity to talk about how this sustains leadership development at your site more later, I think. Carol, can you come in now and share with us the basics of Great Valley's youth program?
Sure, Tanya. For the past 8 years, our site's partnered with the California Migrant Ed program, and we've provided 2 or 3 week writing academies for children of migrant families. And the migrant education program directors first approached us. They had seen our brochure for our existing summer writing workshops for 5th through 8th graders on our campus. And they wanted that same summer writing experience for the migrant students, but they could not afford to transport the students to campus. So we arranged very readily to take the program to the students. And that's been our approach for the past 8 years. And then the Migrant Ed program funds the Writing Academy, and so our contract is written directly with the Migrant Ed program. They select the school sites. They know where the pockets of migrant families live, so they choose who we'll be working with. And then they work hard to recruit the students to attend in the summer. And we provide the brochures and letters to the parents in Spanish and English, and we meet with the school administrators to secure the classrooms, see if we can get computer access and custodial services. We hire the teachers, order the supplies, publish the anthology, and we provide Migrant Ed program with a pre- and post-writing assessment.
This gives me goosebumps to think about the Migrant Ed program, seeing your work and calling you. It's such a great opportunity. Can you tell us, Carol, more about the way the structure is set up? How many school sites hold academies in an average summer?
For the past 4 or 5 years, we've averaged 6 to 8 migrant or EL academies each summer, in addition to the 4 to 5 writing technology workshops and young writers camps that we have throughout our region. We hire anywhere from 45 to 50 TCs each summer to teach at the EL academies and our other writing camps each summer. And no two writing programs are identical. The TCs team up and they create curriculum that's interactive, integrated, and individualized. And the Migrant Ed program emphasizes socially based learning. All students read, write, listen, speak throughout the academies. Very vocal, like very interactive. There's a lot of energy in the room when you walk in, and with close to 30 students in each of the classes. And the teachers are working hard to scaffold the writing process. They're modeling and analyzing genre features for the kids. They're offering a lot of visuals, a lot of joint construction. It's a literature-rich learning environment. The texts are diverse, student-accessible genre, and also benefited from donations from Reading is Fundamental. They've donated or provided books to Migrant Ed, and so the students leave the summer with books that they can read during the summer and pass along to others in the community. And then one of our favorite parts of the Migrant Ed and EL Academies is that we invite the students' families to come in and celebrate their writing, and the students will stand at the mic and read pieces that are in the published anthology. And so administrators are invited, and it's a great celebration for the entire school or district. So one of the real benefits lately has been that MigrantEd has also brought on board the California Many Course students who themselves are from migrant families and are attending college and planning to become teachers themselves. So RTCs become mentors and encourage them to teach alongside us, and we learn from them also. And we're just so thankful that we have these youth academies to foster partnerships among our sites and school districts and Migrant Ed and California Many Core program. It was really just initiated by that one phone call, and it has grown and been an excellent collaboration for us. It's increased our visibility, and we're partnering with programs and individuals who share our passion for serving the community.
That's brilliant, Carol. Thank you. I noticed you refer to this program as these programs as academies, though you also seem to have Young Writers Camp. So I was wondering if you could tell me about that name and maybe if there's a difference.
Well, at first we called all of our youth programs Young Writers Camps, and we realized a year or two into it that it was really insensitive on our part, because many of the students physically live in migrant camps. And also the parents, really, the word academy really resonates with the migrant families. So we made that change.
It makes perfect sense now that you say it. Thank you. Carol, we'll hear more from you about the academies later, but I'd like to bring in Paul. Paul, we're going to move to you and the Northern Virginia Writing Project's approach to this work. And that's another program, I understand, with a long history.
Yeah. Hi, Tanya. We've been doing young writers programs at the Northern Virginia Writing Project for 25 years. And it's interesting, I think, because the decision to do these young writers programs really was born out of demand. People were calling the office, and I think initially the site leadership felt that this wasn't really our work. But the calls were so persistent that we had to take another look. So as of now, we have really a year-round young writers and families program, and it's very central to our work. We do a student summer institute every summer. It's 2 weeks long. And we also do young writers workshops on Saturdays, two in the fall and four in the spring. And they probably bring in about, just from a revenue side, since it's one of the things we're talking about, like $80,000 in sort of gross revenue for the site. Our approach really definitely is, as my colleagues have shared, really comes out of the model of the Summer Institute. So there's lots of writing time and lots of personalized feedback and interaction with individual writers. And one of the core requirements or principles that really guides us is that we want students to who want to be there. So this isn't sort of the parent calling up saying, oh, my child needs help with writing, can you fix them? And they don't want to be there. We have an application process for this summer program, not for the weekend programs. And it's important that students want to be there. And I think that's one of the things that really makes it more like camp than school. And we have this real principle of choice and ownership over the writing. I think, there's some particular elements of the program that would seem probably really familiar to people in the writing project. But I guess what I would say in terms of what's really relevant about the program from a strategic perspective is that we really try to follow the demand. And so right now we've been getting phone calls lately about SAT writing and college prep writing, and so we're very slowly working in that to try to scale that part up. Building the capacity of our teacher consultants is really important to us. So as was mentioned earlier, so we, during our Invitational Summer Institutes, we all go and visit the young writers. And it's so amazing because they're, having been here for 25 years, we have a lot of repeat. Students come back year after year. It's grade 5 through 12. And so there's a real culture of writers. I mean, these are writers. And when you listen, when the teacher consultants listen to them talk to each other, it's just so impressive how they talk to each other and the feedback they give and the writing that they're doing and sharing. And then if the TCs, if they want to get involved, then they would come and they would visit one of the young writers workshops and just hang around, shadow somebody, see what's going on, and then they would be invited to participate, lead one of the kind of the special interest groups that we do, whether it's fantasy or poetry or vampire writing or whatever it happens to be. And then so that's there's definitely pathways for participation. And I think we're also always looking for ways to grow. So geographically, we're doing work in the Shenandoah Valley, which is, we have this huge service area here. And so we have, you know, for 5 years, we've been working on building a program there in the Shenandoah Valley. But also there's changes in content and focus. So we're really starting to focus around family writing and parents supporting their children as writers, and so that's something we're focusing on. And I think maybe the last thing I'll mention is just that for us, there's the quality control factor, if you will, is very, very important to us. So, I mean, I have to give a shout out to Kathy Haley and Kathy Small and Jim Andraconis, the people who actually do all this work. And, they are very close, and they're very open and warm, but they're very committed to the principles that are guiding this.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for giving a shout-out to those specific TCs for sites. I appreciate that. And I'm coming there for the summer because I want to go to vampire writing class.
Great.
So I look forward to hearing more later about your programs as well. Right now, though, I'm going to bring Mike back in. Thanks to all of you for summarizing your site's work. I know you could really talk. We could have a whole show on any one of your programs. So it was great to just offer listeners a taste of the richness of each of the programs. These descriptions also clearly speak to a great diversity of approaches around the country in response to people's local needs and interests. Mike, I'd love to bring you back to talk for a few minutes about how these programs offer opportunities for sites as they're thinking about sustainability.
Sure. So I mentioned that that this kind of programming, this youth programming, can be a great source of stability for a site. Stability comes from, it provides sustainability from things that can be depended on from year to year to survive the things that come our way. It's been common for us to think of these programs in the history that I've been with the writing project as kind of ancillary to the core work of a site, ancillary to working in schools and nurturing professional communities, because we tend to do them as an additional thing to intersect with our communities. All along, of course, sites have tried to integrate this work with youngsters in as useful a way as they can into the core work that they do with teachers. But the interesting thing, I think, in our conversation today is how our guests have succeeded in building a much broader and deeper kind of effort than has been common in the network. And I think we have a chance with them to see what they've accomplished as examples of how strategically scaling up this work can be a source of stability and, in particularly, a bulwark for a site's finances.
Mike, do you mean that we should look at the prospect of turning youth programs into site's profit centers?
Well, I like that idea, possibly, yes. But I also find in my conversations with folks around the network that it's probably unrealistic to think of them, of these programs, as a strategic profit center. We'll have to ask our guests to talk about that as we continue to visit with them. But as we do, I hope that we'll keep in mind the significance in these programs of simply being able to provide work. Work for TCs who are ready to try new practices, TCs that are ready to push at the borders of their talents. That in and of itself is an important element of the sustainability of the site. It's providing job opportunities, in effect. Even if they're extracurricular job opportunities, they're basically what sites are looking for in doing work in the world. And so Young Writers programs provide exactly that in a self-sustaining way.
I think you're absolutely right, Mike, and I think that's very well said, that we now, sites sometimes struggle to have work for TCs to do, and clearly at these sites they have provided lots of work for TCs and lots of really great work. But we can't, I guess we can't forget about the money. How should a site director think about money in relationship to youth programming, do you think? What's a business approach?
Well, we can't live without the money. But if we approach this question as a business person might approach trying to be successful, then the answer might be that the money is essentially a natural outcome of delivering value to customers. Maybe this would be a good lens to use as we look at what our guests have to say about what is happening at their sites. Are their programs responding to a significant demand, a need felt by their customers, a need that's strongly enough felt that their customers will allocate or at least help find sufficient resources for enabling this work? Paul has already commented on that, and I think we'll see more in, as we continue to talk with some of that showing up. Let's see what our guests have to say about the needs they have encountered and how they've tried to meet them.
Yes, Mike, let's.
Okay.
That's a good idea. Mary, why don't you start by telling us about your partnerships with other local organizations?
Okay, thanks, Tanya. In addition to partnering with the public schools, where our many TCs obviously teach, and the private schools, and our university, we have partnerships with museums, the National Park in our backyard, and Botanical Gardens. So I think I will highlight in a minute a partnership that was, there was a need at a particular place to reach out to someone who could help them realize their dream. But our partnerships, whether established with a public school or a museum, are started when excited TCs, and I have to put this back in the TC realm because they are the ones who really drive and lead our organization, which is a very, gives us a lot of credibility and validity because we don't go in and say, oh, you need us. It comes from the TCs. But in certain cases, because of our visibility, entities such as museums and the Botanical Garden, Longwood Gardens, seek us out. So they return, TCs return to their school districts with a proposal to start a summer youth writing or reading program or with an idea to pursue a passion. So we have partnerships with public schools and national parks, museums, and the internationally known Longwood Gardens, which I'll highlight here. Longwood Gardens, the partnership there is unique for many reasons, but the education coordinator there 6 years ago actually contacted us because of our presence in the community. Longwood wasn't sure exactly what they wanted, so we were really able to help shape the partnership together. the TC, and this is another value, I think Paul talked about this, really knowing who your TCs are and what their aficionado, what they're interested in and want to do, this was very helpful because when Longwood contacted me, I'm an amateur gardener, but we also had a TC who happens to be a horticultural and botany aficionado, and she came to that first meeting with Longwood. And in addition, they actually wanted a youth program, but our TC wanted to offer a graduate program. After several discussions, we came up with both a graduate program that we could offer through our university and a young writers program that would kind of straddle either side of it. So after several summers of offering the three-credit graduate course and the youth programs, Patty Kohler and Andy Reese, the two TCs who coordinate the Longwood Gardens youth writing programs and the graduate program, decided they would try to embed, they wanted to pilot, we're always big on pilots, to pilot a one-credit graduate course where the teachers who registered for the course could work alongside in the morning with Patty and Andy and the young writers and young readers. And then in the afternoon when the young writers and young readers left, they would have their downtime where they would reflect, do the metacognition on how the morning went, think about how they could take this back to their classrooms. So we had both, again, Longwood came to us with an idea and Amorphous, and we didn't know what they wanted, and so it took a series of meetings to kind of pull this together. But we're going into our sixth summer and our sixth spring with Longwood Gardens, and the classes, both the graduate courses fill to capacity, as do the young writers programs.
That's a great story. I love it.
Well, and it's a great place to visit. So we're never at a lack for people who would like to observe what's going on at Longwood Gardens, from the lily gardens to the orchids to the outdoor topiary gardens. The youth programs really build and sustain the project community and the camaraderie. And Patty Kohler, who originally helped Longwood and myself envision this for the project, brought on a new TC, Andy Reese, 3 years ago. So that, again, is a way that it sustains and builds community in within the writing project.
That's brilliant. Can you talk to us about how the finances play out for this kind of program? Is there revenue that helps to support the work at the site?
Well, I can give the 30,000 view that all the Young Readers programs pay for the teacher pay, because we do pay, for the T-shirts. We design T-shirts, and the Young Writers and Readers, we always have and have had for many years their designs on the T-shirts. It pays for the anthology. I think Paul and Carol both have that anthology. It pays for the authors who come to visit. Again, it's modeled on the Summer Institute. And so the gross receipts that we bring in pay for all of those things, and then the net and or the revenue that's left over actually pays for one full-time staff member who is part of the Westchester University clerical staff community. So we're very fortunate. Again, we've been around for a long time, but we pay for all of the administrative costs for our TCs and the teaching costs and all the supplies, and then also we have a staff member that we're able and have been able to support, fortunately, for as long as I've been here. So that's 13 years.
So you might call that fortunate or really, really hardworking.
It is. And yes.
Thanks, Mary. I'm going to bring Carol now in so that we can hear more about the centrality of the Summer Migrant Academies and youth work in general to Great Valley's TC Learning Community. Carol, can you talk, for instance, about how youth work informs your Summer Institute?
Sure. We had a shift in our priorities, and from 1999 to 2003, we began intentionally recruiting bilingual and experienced teachers of English learners, and that enabled us to take advantage of the migrant ed opportunity, and we began dedicating a week of the Summer Institute to better understanding how to best teach English learners. And by 2004, we adopted the stance that our writing project was going to build a reputation for knowing how to best teach English learners, and that we are all teachers of English learners. It doesn't fall on the shoulders of the ELD teachers. It doesn't fall on the shoulders just of the bilingual teachers on our campus, but we're all teachers of English learners. We have very high populations in two counties in our region that of K-12 English learners that, you know, we could not continue to ignore. We had to make that our focus. And so as the migrant ed academies expand, so does our capacity each summer from the Summer Institute. So at first, the research in the Summer Institute particularly focused on Jim Moffitt's work. He influenced our summer academies. Then we ended up offering an advanced EL Institute study genre that was funded by an NWP mini grant. And then our teachers wanted to continue, and so the TC's organized two book studies, books by Pauline Gibbons, Scaffolding Language, Scaffolding Learning, and her more recent book, English Learners, Academic Literacy and Thinking, Learning in the Challenge Zone. So that's really been TC-powered. I think they caught the EL fever and really have seen the importance of teaching all students in our classrooms. So what we do in the Summer Institute to keep teachers appraised of what we're doing in the summer with the migrants and the EL academies is bring in 5 to 7 TCs. They'll come spend an hour or two and explain the leadership paths that they chose and how our site has become their professional home. And many of the summer fellows are influenced by the EL knowledge that's shared by our TCs who have participated in book studies and our ongoing inquiry group and those who teach in the summer youth programs. So by the final week of the Summer Institute, several of the summer fellows write on their commitment cards that they want to teach a summer writing academy, and particularly they want to do work with English learners. So although there have been cuts in migrant ed funding, we have TCs who are well-placed. They're either administrators or they have influence with their district office, and they've managed to cobble together school funding to provide academies for English learners. And what we're finding in California is the number of migrant families diminishes. We are looking, we're pushing to work more with administrators to provide EL academies using a variety of funding sources, state and federal, that are available to their site.
That's great, Carol. So the academies really are responsive to the needs of your students in your area and also, I guess, to the available funding stream. So when you had large numbers of migrant students, you were able to provide migrant academies, and as those numbers drop, to push on local resources for EL academies, you're saying?
Yes, and now we're taking a new turn. We've capitalized on a relationship with an urban school district, and who contracted with us for some PD work last year. And as part of the partnership with that school, we offered a one-week writing technology workshop for incoming ninth graders who had been identified as at-risk students. And so it was a very successful week, and so this writing academy spurred our technology team to ask how can we push ourselves, our understanding of technology and use with all students. We've talked about that with our ELs. And now, okay, what have we learned that we can share with our TCs, maybe with the same approach that our TCs took when we were concentrating on English learners? Now let's put our focus on closing the achievement gap for some of these sites, particularly the urban school districts in our region. So our TCs are able to experiment with the technology in the summer, as Mike mentioned. You know, it's low-risk teaching. in ways that is not possible in their home districts for a variety of reasons. Our tech team shares what they've learned during the summer writing technology workshops with our summer fellows and interested TCs at Saturday seminars. And we've noted that we've moved from teaching PowerPoint to getting kids involved blogging on wikis and now onto digital storytelling. So I'm predicting that we'll see more of that. More of our TCs will be comfortable using technology in their own classrooms, and they'll encourage your district to host PD or youth program. And we hope we'll have more opportunities to facilitate summer writing academies for at-risk students.
Carol, there are so many things I'd love to ask you about, but I'm gonna focus so that we have lots of time for Paul too. But I would like to ask you, in the same way we asked Mary, to talk about how does the financial part of this play out for these programs.
Well, we really think beyond the money, and we have these programs that, and good years could bring in anywhere from $70,000 to $90,000 gross. And they seed other programs, and we look at it as investing in building stronger relationships with partners who have the same goals and passions for teaching that we have. So a few examples are we sponsor an annual EL symposium where the TCs who teach in the Micronet Academies showcase their effective teaching approaches from the summer, and we're able to host student teachers, interns, mini-core pre-service teachers, to come for no cost. And the funding also supports an ongoing EL inquiry group that meets monthly at our site and also pays for TCs to attend. Occasionally we'll send someone down to UCLA Writing Project for the conference with different eyes. And we just noted that with fewer traditional type professional development contracts at our site, that the summer academies stabilized their funding, provided visibility and recognition, and they're just wonderful opportunities for us to host district or school sites and utilize the Youth Academy as a demo lab for teachers at that site. So we'd like to expand on that summer PD model. And we encourage our TCs to lead a variety of programs so that someone who teaches in a youth program might come back and ask, well, can I do something like a family literacy night at my campus, and I'd like to publish a family's writing at our site. And we always say yes, because it establishes a writing community within that school, and it creates a writing tradition for that community that the families embrace, and the parent-faculty organization will jump in and provide snacks and goodies, and we're able to keep a presence in the school district when there's no money for PD, because we have teachers who are there. They enjoy writing with the communities, and the families love to keep that tradition going.
Thanks so much for that picture, Carol. I'm going to go ahead and bring Paul in now. Paul, you shared with us the proud history of the youth programs at Northern Virginia Writing Project. How is the site coming to see this work as part of the site's core identity? We know it didn't start there.
Well, it's such an important and really an ongoing question, I think, because in order to overcome all the impediments and obstacles that we face in really delivering great value, the way Mike put it, it has to be connected to your core passion and belief. And so we did an advanced summer institute in June of this year with our site leadership, but we're continuing to engage with this question. I think what we've come to is that while we see ourselves in a sense like there's this sense that, oh, it's the Writing Project and we're about professional development with teachers, really deep behind that is a really deep care about the condition of youth in America and our desire to see young people thrive. But the best chance for young people to thrive is for teachers to thrive. So there's a real interconnection between working with students directly and working with teachers. And so I think that we've come to resolve that with this issue of alignment. It's like we're really aligned. When we're doing our young writers work, we're really doing our main work. And when we're working with teachers, we're really doing our main work. But I think Carol really explained that so well when she said, you know, we're all EL teachers. Like, that kind of alignment is essential to actually, I think, carry on this work with passion that you have to make it fresh and wonderful and inspiring, which it really needs to be. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think it's a really beautiful vision. I was wondering if you could talk about, in the way that I think you've started to state and sort of the way that Carol talked about it too, how the youth work that you do informs or pushes this kind of thinking?
I think it pushes it in a really big way, actually, because of the fact that we are a professional development organization that in many ways we think about, like, going to school districts and partnering with school districts and all the work we do directly with teachers. So I think when we work with students in this atmosphere of choice, where students are choosing to come and work on their writing and it's a really refreshing environment for the teachers to work in and kind of do this great work. But it also, I think what it does is it opens up some strategic doors for us. Because when we're working with students directly, that means we're contacting and interacting with their parents. And so there's a strategic relationship here in the sense of our positioning in the community. Who are we as the Northern Virginia Writing Project? And so I think it helps us with this sense of positioning that, yes, we are about teachers and, yes, we are about students. But I will say that, and this is kind of a realistic statement, is to say that I think that when I look at sort of funders and people, it's hard to get funding for teachers, actually. But it's easier to get funding for students. And so when you're having an impact and you're able to make that deep connection, I think, to students, I think that's essential. And what we've done by working with parents is we've been able to, and this is something we're really starting to do now, is really focus on, and I'll give another shout out to Karen Hickman, who heads up our family writer workshops. And so while students are doing these Saturday workshops, there's a free workshop for parents that they can come to. So they're waiting to pick up their kids, you know, and so we have them come and we do some workshops with them, have them doing some writing. But after it's over, we've now gone to doing these parents' workshops or family writers' workshops. And so it's providing us a way to get known. I mean, these are business people. These are community people. These are advocates for us. And so just recently I got a note, you know, from a parent, you know, and I have it here, so I'll just read it to you. And it says, you know, my fifth grader absolutely loves your workshop. She leaves more motivated to be an even better writer. I wanted to also thank you for the family writing workshop today. Even my kindergartner learned a lot and really enjoyed her first college class. Like, that's Aww. Invaluable to us in terms of being out in the community and who we are and having that sense. And so we can go to that parent now and say, you know, do you know good teachers to nominate for the Summer Institute? Or can you write a letter to your principal and say something about the writing project? So we're trying to engage. I think this alignment helps us really think about our positioning in the community. And so this has really, really become a big deal for us.
That's excellent. I always find myself with writing project directors saying, oh, of course, that's a brilliant idea. That's great. Why didn't I think of that? And I think this way of engaging parents and seeing parents as allies is really brilliant, Paul. Thanks for sharing it.
You bet.
I've asked every wedding, can you talk a little bit about the revenue stream and
yeah.
its relationship to the work of your site?
Sure. Two things I want to say here. One is that there's hard cost and soft cost. This is how I look at it. So the hard costs are basically, you know, the cost of snacks, the cost of paying for teachers. And so if you look at a budget, so for example, for our Student Summer Institute, it brought in about $50,000 last summer. Maybe at the end of after paying everybody, there's a couple of thousand dollars really that's a profit to the site. So it's not a big income generator for the site, although as Mike pointed out, it's creating a lot of work for teachers and all these other benefits that it has for the students and for the teachers and for the community, et cetera. But there's also the soft cost that I think you have to take into consideration, which is you know, the people in the office who are answering phone calls, who are sending out flyers, who are doing all the kind of back-end work that goes on year-round. Now, over the year, I think, you know, we probably end up with, you know, $20,000 or something like that, which is which is a chunk of money that helps us do other work. So it's very valuable to us. But and maybe there's ways to think about it more, you know, in terms of cost savings or something like that. But I just want to say there is a hard cost and a soft cost issue that does come up for me. I think the other piece I want to mention, I think, in terms of revenue is to say pricing is a difficult challenge. When you think about pricing, it's good to get some help if people are out there struggling with how do we price this. You know, it's good to have some business people, some board people, some people to get some counsel on how to do that. And maybe the last thing I'll say is just that we've identified grant funding opportunity in the Northern Virginia area. There are foundations who are interested in working with disadvantaged populations of students. And so one of the things that we're doing right now is we're building out as we're all kind of always looking for ways to expand this work, what we're looking to do is to partner with some of these foundations around serving disadvantaged populations. There's money out there to do it, but it does take planning and time to get that done. But I think by next year we should have something, another way of expanding out and some other partners, financial partners, to help us continue to do our work.
That's great. Thanks, Paul. Paul, Mary, and Carol, I want to say actually I'd be thrilled to stay on the phone all night with you to talk about these youth programs. I just can't get enough of the stories and then thinking about the intricacy of the ways that they feed your sites on all these levels. Of course, you might have other things to do tonight, and we are getting close to the end of the show, so I'd like to take this opportunity to bring Mike back. Mike, all through the hour, you've been a great responder, making visible the big ideas, the theories of action, and the patterns you've noticed as the directors talk about youth programming at their site. I'd like to give you the opportunity to share some closing thoughts about what you've heard.
Sure. So I think we hear some great themes emerging from these conversations. I think it's clear that these sites were ready to meet really real needs. Needs that because they were ready to meet, then they could step up to the plate and offer to meet them, did so, and the money, the resources that were needed, came. It's the natural result of being ready to do business and then stepping forth and offering to do it. I'd especially like to emphasize something that stood out to me. I guess I'd call it the uniqueness of what writing projects have to offer local educational institutions like museums and libraries and cultural centers. Our folks don't just bring in busloads of youngsters for a tour. They actually bring structured classroom learning experiences into these community spaces. They facilitate the learning. They use literacy tools in a way that is highly supportive of building relationships between the youngsters and the teachers and the community institutions. Many sites have discovered that their relationships with these institutions can become quite long-lived and rewarding for everyone because of this uniqueness. And then another point that this leads to, bottom line issue of sustainability and stability for a site. A site will be much more sustainable as a university program if it can develop long-term, self-sustaining partnerships of exactly this sort, as witnessed by what we heard from our guests. Particularly in the case of Mary's conversation about what happened at Pennsylvania Writing and Literature Project, in the sense that she talked about the kinds of institutions that are likely to exist within the communities of most sites. most sites can find libraries and museums that are in their territory that would love to partner on this sort of thing. And then I loved Paul's comments about how the relationships with families built from his program and became a springboard for the site's connections in the community. That's a tremendous, powerful force that works through these things when they're so vitally built into a business relationship where there's need and capacity to deliver that need. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does, Mike. Anything else, Mike?
I don't know if we want to hear from closing thoughts from them before we say goodbye.
I would love to do that. Carol, Mary, Paul, I'm wondering if you have any final thoughts about the programs you talked about that you didn't get an opportunity to share, or if you've got new ideas that might have sprung up out of this conversation that you'd like to, you know, just throw out there and test right here on the radio.
Hi, this is Mary. Just very quickly, Mike reminded me when he was summarizing things that collaboration, especially going forward in this, again, cliched new landscape, collaboration is so important, and the partnerships that we establish, whether it's with something like Longwood Gardens or parents or the ELL, Micro Foundation, we can together provide services, wonderful services, and also increase our and maintain our sustainability together. So Longwood, we provide something that they don't have. They provide something that we don't have. And together, we can sustain ourselves both, and I hate to talk about it, with money, but also doing what we do really well and shaping the literacy lives and enhancing the literacy lives of students in our areas. So that collaboration with all the different entities that we heard tonight seems really important to me.
We've got some great resources from Mary in our Connect space where we've posted resources.
I guess I just would reiterate that this work is really satisfying for TCs who, you know, not every TC, this is what they want to do, but for a number of them, this work is so satisfying. And so I just want to encourage the site directors and site leaders who might be listening to have that confidence that this work is going to be really exciting for people in your site if you give them the opportunity to lead here. They're going to really get excited about it.
Yeah, and if I could just add on to what Paul said, really trusting the leadership that you cultivate in the Summer Institute, and you allow the teachers to move beyond the Summer Institute with confidence and support, because they are the motor that runs us. And I really appreciate Mike pointing out that that writing projects have a value, and I think that institutes would appreciate having partnerships with us. And I think we take ourselves for granted and don't always value what it is we do. So thanks, Mike.
Sure.
We might also mention
there's a Marshall Plan, Oklahoma State University Marshall Plan monograph available on our website. Tanya, I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Yes, or you could, Mike.
Just to say that it's another resource that doesn't happen to be in Connect at the moment. So everything that I posted in Connect from the workshop from these three sites is a great collection of things, and then that monograph is a lengthy exploration of actually turning a young writers program into a business model for the site.
Excellent. Thanks. Thank you, Mike, for being such a great responder to the work that we heard about today. And thank you, Mary, Paul, and Carol, for sharing these, you know, really beautiful plans that bring youth programs into writing project sites and develop writing project sites in such great and remarkable ways. I hope I'm really thankful to you for being on the air tonight, and I hope everyone will download our show and share it with others and go into Connect and find all those great resources. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Tonya. Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, everybody.
Good night.
NVWP.org.